Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. I hope everyone had a wonderful August break, got to enjoy the summer, although it feels pretty hot today with the
Boy.
temperatures. But I really hope that everyone had a great time. I'm really excited to welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today, which is on Tuesday, September 5th, 2023. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded, and we place the meeting audio on our website, which is WMATA.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you'd like to raise your virtual hands or lower your virtual hands, you can go under reactions and click on the raise hand icon. That will do the trick. Everyone should be on mute at this point. I would request for everyone to please remain on mute unless speaking. It helps us eliminate any external noise. So in advance, thank you. And just a friendly reminder, we also have American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name when you make any comments. It helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at that time. And when anyone listens to the audio recording, it helps them knowing who the speakers are. Chair Sheehan, if you permit, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda, followed by taking the roll call of the AAC members.
Perfect, Anu. Thank you.
Thank you. I would display my screen when I go through the agenda. So if you would quickly bear with me for a quick moment, so that I can share my screen. Okay, I believe my share is visible at this point.
Yes.
Thank you for the confirmation, Sandy. So after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Chair Sheehan will go through the motion of approving today's meeting agenda, last meeting minutes, which was in July, and the board report. Afterwards, at 5:40, we have our Senior Vice President and Assistant Chief Safety Officer, Jamie Johnson. Mr. Johnson is here to share some very important information with us. So we will hear him. At 6 p.m., we have Michael Anzalo. He is the Vice President and Chief of Metro Transit Police Department. Welcome, Mr. Johnson and Chief Anzalo. At 6:25, we will have public comments. At 6:40, we will have a committee, the bylaws committee discussion. Give us a brief about the AAC bylaws update. At 7 p.m., we will briefly talk about the Hettinger Award 2023 nomination process. At 7:10, we will take the bus and rail subcommittee report. At 7, we will have the Metro Access subcommittee report. And the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30 p.m. I would stop sharing my screen now. Going through the roll call of the committee members, when I call out your name, please confirm your presence.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Azar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia. Tino is on the meeting with us. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you.
Hello, present.
Thank you, Steve. Thomas Mangrum.
Sure, you're welcome.
Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Doris Ray. Doris Ray did inform that she may not be able to attend the meeting today. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. I believe Paul is connected with us. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow.
I'm here.
Thank you. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting. Chair Sheehan, I would at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Very good. Thank you, Anu. And I did hear what Paul just joined.
Yes, I'm here.
Very good, Paul. Thank you. Okay. Somehow I figured you would be. So let's see. First up, I have approval of the agenda. Pretty tightly packed tonight. On Reddit, do I have any additions to the agenda? Do I have a motion to pass the agenda as presented?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
I second.
Bunch of seconds. Okay, great. Good. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any aye. Opposition? Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Next up are going to be the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes as drafted? Hearing none. Can I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
All right. Thank you, Tino. Good. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? Oh, thank you. Any opposition? And any abstentions? Okay, minutes are approved. Next, we will have the board report. Do I have any additions or corrections to the board report? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the board report as drafted?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you very much. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or no abstentions? Very good. Those minutes are approved. Good. Thank you. Of course, we all know that there may be some additions based on what we hear tonight, but that'll be what I present at the board meeting. We have Senior Vice President and Safety Officer Jamie Johnson here to speak to us. I did hear several months ago a presentation that they have made concerning safety issues at WMATA. And I thought it was extremely well done. And it was something that I felt it would be good for AAC to hear. So, sir, I'd be very happy to have you speak to us about safety issues and what you see and think is going on with WMATA.
Great, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much indeed. Really grateful. Just a sound check. Can you hear me?
You are coming over loud and clear.
That's great. And Anu, are you able to bring up my slides when you're ready? Don't worry, folks. This isn't going to be death by PowerPoint. I really want to talk to you about three topics. And Mr. Sheehan, I hope the presentation you're referring to is the one roughly that I'm going to deliver. Perfect. And if not, keep me on track and I can tell you whatever you need to know. I'm very conscious of the fact that time is very tight, so I will be swift and I will leave some time for questions. First of all, just to introduce myself, as you know, I'm Jamie Johnson. I work for Teresa Impastato and I run the safety team here at Metro. My background is more aligned to the chief, who will be speaking to you after me, and the fact that I was a police officer in London for 10 years. You can tell that my accent is not from Alabama. I am indeed from London, and I came to America and met my wife. I came here for a Fulbright and then met my wife. And so policing in America is very different, as you can imagine, from the UK. So I really wanted to continue my career in public service. So transit was right up there as the second area of interest. And I've built a career here. I've been here for 7 years working for the former chief operating officer and now the chief safety readiness officer, Teresa. And what I want to do today is just to share three thoughts with you so that you have a better insight into safety at Metro, which I'm sure you already do, but I wanted to give you the latest perspective from me. If we go to the next slide. So these are the three areas I want to talk about. Is firstly, the organizational structure and how accessibility fits into that after relatively recent changes. I want to outline the safety strategy to you, which is always evolving, as you can imagine. And also, I just wanted to give you some context about how we compare as an agency to other transit agencies, and then hopefully some time for Q&A. Before I start, I just wanted to say thank you to you as a committee, as a group of individuals, for contributing your time to what is a really important topic for Metro. It's a really important topic for the region, which is making our service accessible to everybody. I feel it's an area where we've got huge opportunity, and we continue to push and plug. And there are people like Christian Blake, Carol Lopez, Chief Anzalo, who are really champions of it, the concept of accessibility. And it's a real sort of pleasure to work alongside you as you're part of this committee, but also my colleagues at certain parts of the organization that are pushing this forward. So it's really exciting in that respect. So if we go to the first topic, next slide, please, Anu, which is where accessibility sits in the organization. As you know, Randy Clark, the general manager, arrived just over a year ago now, and he really wanted to mix things up. I think his main objective of delivering a December reorganization was to break down silos and to take organizations or teams that were maybe at the side or not as effective as they could be in the current organization, and putting them alongside teams that really can make things happen. And I think that's what's happened with system-wide accessibility, where the Office of ADA Policy and Planning has moved into that department. And Teresa told me yesterday that she's really excited that she has selected a new VP for that team. She will be starting in October the 10th, and she will be very excited once she's through the door to brief you and to introduce you on who that person is. It's a real opportunity because now system-wide accessibility fits alongside similar departments that are doing similar things in overseeing the organization or making change across the organization. But most importantly, they're able to influence infrastructure, capital projects through processes and full procedures, and also operations. That's what safety does, that's what quality does in training. And now accessibility is part of this team, this troop of individuals who are really trying to push forward change while, you know, the infrastructure folks are delivering their projects and heads down delivering operations. Doesn't mean to say they don't rate accessibility is very important, but we've got the time and space, the resources to work with them to deliver change. So that's really exciting. And that's the first point I wanted to drive home. So moving to the next slide, I've got a couple of slides about the safety strategy, which I hope you will see and understand is trying to empower individuals, mostly inside the organization, but also outside the organization in the sort of the Metro family, the extended Metro family of which you are a part, to put their hands up and say, there's an issue here. We need to log it because we are a big, you know, bureaucracy, and we need to then have procedures to effectively manage risk. There are many organizations that do this brilliantly or a lot better than us, and we fully recognize that. But we are now implementing it ourselves and making significant progress. So I'll just run through a few points here. So the strategy itself is called the Safety Management System, which is ultimately gathering data, gathering reports, complaints, investigations, accidents, and putting them through a standardized process with qualified individuals to assess the hazards that come with those incidents, and then make a fair and rational decision on what we do with the risk associated with the hazards, and then follow through on making the changes and improvements. And that is a safety management system. It's not some kind of, it's nothing more complicated than that. However, in a big organization like this, it takes some time and effort to put it in place. So here on the left, we've got the employee reporting system. So that's ensuring the trust is there to get the data flowing in. Then we've got safety risk coordinators and safety committees, who are the humans following process to make an assessment of the risk. Then there's the data part. We have to make sure our data is in better condition and we're collecting it from all the right places. Then there's oversight and quality investigation. So that's more, you know, really where a lot of the safety effort is currently, is the response and the oversight. But we want to try and be more proactive and look at leading indicators in the future. And then lastly, there's just creating a positive safety culture. And what we're trying to get to is a situation where everyone, including you, we'll be able to answer the questions, what are our top safety risks? What are we doing about it? And is it working? And everyone will have a slightly different interpretation depending on where they sit in the organization. But those are the questions that at the moment people would have a sort of gut feeling about them, but they don't really have the data to give them the true answer. Okay, next slide. The second part of the strategy that I wanted to describe to you is the strategic transformation plan, which is, I am sure you have heard about it. It was published in February now. It's Your Metro, The Way Forward. That is really Randy Clark's blueprint for how he and the rest of the organization is going to move forward over the next few years. Importantly, safety is a core value. It's not necessarily we are going to do safety projects or safety. Everything we do is going to be safe. We're not going to allow a service to be provided unless it is safe. So this idea of, you know, safety being a separate conversation, we're trying to break that down. And I just wanted to highlight, as part of that strategic transformation plan, we're involved across the board in the Department of Safety. And so is system-wide accessibility, that team. However, there are four projects that I just wanted to draw your attention to so you can get a sense of where safety is focusing a lot of attention. Firstly, as you've already heard about it, it's implementing the safety management system, as I just described. The second is streamlining and optimizing our rules. So there are many opportunities to relook at the rules that govern the way we run our run Metro Access, the way we run bus or rail, maintenance and operations, and say, hang on, can we do this better? Can we look at the industry and be safer in how we do things and reduce incidents? Number three is implementing the incident management framework. So that is us standardizing and improving the way we respond to incidents, whether it's someone falling down an escalator, whether it's a derailment, a collision on a bus or Metro Access. That's us improving the way we respond. So we identify risk and then reduce it and make it less likely to occur the next time. And then lastly is initiating just culture. So this is a more ambitious and aspirational project where we are trying to look at safety incidents and not point the finger, but rather look at the situation, understand what the root cause problem is, and be much fairer in how we deal with our staff, which in turn will improve reporting and increase that cultural effectiveness when it comes to safety. So that's the second part of my conversation today, is understanding the safety strategy. And I hope that I've given you a bit of a flavor there. Lastly, Anu, if we could go to the next slide, I'd just like to run through some comparisons. It would be very high level, but there are some graphics here which give you a sense of how we at Metro are performing on some key areas compared to other agencies, which I've listed here: Chicago, Boston, Atlanta, San Francisco, Philadelphia, LA, and New York. So we are part of this a group of organizations that are comparable to us because of size and the modes that we deliver. And what we've done is, using the National Transit Database, we've looked at the trends over the last 5 years up to November 2022, and then compared ourselves and see where we rank. Just to give you a sense, because going into like reams and reams of data in this session might not be productive. So if we go to the next slide, the one I wanted to start with is Metro Access. And, you know, the story here is that Christian Blake has been doing huge amounts to positively impact these numbers. What I would say is that you can see that collisions is higher historically and that we'd want to be. But a lot of that was to do with the COVID dynamic, where we had lots of drivers out at higher speeds and under a bit more pressure than normal, we feel. And also we think that the reporting culture is improving. So a minor collision is now being reported, where previously the contractor may not have done that. So just to counteract some of that, there are numerous initiatives that Christian is leading. For example, you know, enhancing how we use DriveCam. Already use it, but in thinking about how we can use that more innovatively, always reviewing fitness for duty and how drivers are prepared for duty before they even take to behind the wheel. And then also a safety campaign, you know, incident free in 23 on a monthly basis, emphasizing a safety issue to reduce, you know, both collisions and those customer injuries, which often relate to collisions. So, you know, that's the picture with Metro Access. If we go to the next slide. So this is rail. This is a very similar set of graphs, but for rail. And really, you can see the dark blue line here versus the light blue block. For collisions, rail derailments, customer injuries, and employee injuries, we really are performing much better from a safety perspective than our comparable peer agencies. Now, if you compare this to other agencies that, you know, maybe have 30 buses and a much smaller population, the numbers may be very different. But this is against peer agencies that are comparable. Once again, I can dive into lots of detail on these, but I wanted to give you, because of time, just the graphs to absorb that information. And I know that folks might want data in a different format. I'm more than willing to provide that after the meeting. In response to these figures, we want to keep them low. We've got the 8000 series design that we're focusing on. Safety and accessibility, absolute top of the list there when it comes to how those are being designed. We're looking at a return to automatic train operations, where automated basically the train and the track combined to regulate the speed of the train, assist with stopping platforms, making it a smoother ride for our passengers, where accessibility is very important. And then we've also focusing on the escalator and elevator rehabs, which, as you know, is an ongoing effort across the system, huge, huge capital project to keep these safety numbers low. And then lastly, to the bus, Anu, it's a very good story here too. You can see bike and pedestrian injuries extremely low, which, you know, that surprised me, that one, because we have collisions, but in fact injuries are very, very, very low compared to other agencies. You can see the collisions is always a worry for me. It's something that we're constantly working with bus to improve. drive cam training, safety campaigns. But again, we're doing well. Customer injuries were at the average, and then better than average for employee injuries. So moving to the final slide, these are the takeaways from this short presentation. Firstly, really do realize that there has been change in the last year, putting accessibility back at the center of the organization, and it is a priority for Randy Clark, for Teresa, myself, and many others like Christian, the chief, and Carol. Number two is really we're doing pretty well when we compare ourselves to other peer agencies. And the final point is that safety really is a sort of not only a strategy, we're trying to place it at the center of everything we do. So if it's not safe, we're not going to do it. So Mr. Sheehan, I hope that gives you a flavor. I've tried to stick to time. If there is time for questions, I'm obviously very welcome to receive them.
Oh, that's perfect. That really does set the stage for what we have and how it's set up. I'm guessing that we probably have some questions from this group.
Yes.
Tino, I thought you might be one.
Chair Sheehan, yeah. This is Anu.
Yeah. Go ahead, Anu.
Tino has his hand up, and Rico also posted a note saying that he has a question.
Yes, I did hear that he dropped. That's why I was wondering if he was back. Tina, why don't you start?
Jamie, if you could go back to your first slide, I'd appreciate it. I know it's... not that. Not the cover.
The organizational chart. Slide three.
This one here. This one.
Yep.
Occupational health and wellness. In recent weeks, there was one incident in which a Metro Rail operator was inebriated and passed so many stations, which is a danger, obviously. And while I haven't heard of any recent problems, the question of weed is no longer illegal for people 21 years and older. There used to be urine tests to make sure that people weren't under the influence when they came to work. Since it's legal for people over 21, there still is a kind of oral test that can be given and shows whether somebody's been on weed in the last 5 hours or so. Both alcohol and weed and other drugs are a hazard for passengers when...
Tino, can we get to a question? Tino?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, what are you doing with respect to our operators nowadays?
Yes, so we have a very strict drug and alcohol policy. The incident you referred to of the inebriated train operator, that was actually back around Christmas time, I believe. It is a very isolated type of incident, totally unacceptable, very disappointing. But we do have a drug and alcohol testing program in two parts. The first is responsive. So if there is an incident, there are certain circumstances where a train operator or a bus operator can be tested. And we're actually reviewing that currently with the Washington Metro Safety Commission to understand whether that's in fact too punitive and too aggressive. But safety is the priority here. We've got to root out problems if there are any. And secondly, there's the proactive drug and alcohol testing, which is randomized and has to meet, you know, certain rules when it comes to people's human rights, etc. But ultimately, we test, I don't know the exact numbers, but we test a significant number of people every month without notice. And that is in partnership with the union to ensure that we identify both alcohol, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, those chemicals are all included in the test. Tino, I'd be very willing to provide you with more information on that, or to talk to you tomorrow or any other day about that in more detail if you've got some ideas or concerns about it.
Well, thank you, Jamie.
Anu, yes. Did Rico come back?
He did come back.
Yes, Rico's here. This is his interpreter.
Okay.
Yes. I have a question about two things. This is just to you and the chief about the VRI. So my wife is deaf. She's from another country. When she told the officer, I'm deaf, I don't understand. We have to make sure all the transit police are trained to use a VRI, meaning video remote interpreter. Some of them tell me they might be working, some is not. It might work, it might be not. We have to make sure all officers are trained to use the VRI. Okay, because that is so important for people who are deaf or hard of hearing like myself. This follow on the safety.
Understand, Rico. I believe the chief is up next, and I will allow him to, you know, respond to that specifically. I am very interested to not just think about the police, but, you know, all our other front-facing, you know, public-facing staff like station managers or bus operators. There's a huge number of people, but let's think about how that might be possible. I don't know. I can imagine the steps, but I would need your guidance to know a little bit more about how we might implement that. So, Rika, I'm going to provide my contact details to Chair Sheehan, my cell phone 24/7 and my email. So maybe that's something, Rico, I could come back to you on this week.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know if you can you share here? Can you share here with my email address, please?
Thank you, Rico. Your question, your inquiry was shared with the chief.
Okay. Good.
And if we have one more question, we'll take that, and then we'll move on to the chief.
Chair Sheehan, we have two hands up by Philip Weintraub and Paul Samuelford.
Okay, let's make 30-second questions each.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Philip?
I also want to know that also to make things more accessible is that maybe we should also, like, for the Metropolitan Police, for the Metro Police gets trained on how to deal with people with autism, how to handle people with autism, like myself, because there's some issues. Like one time there was like a friend, somebody I knew from up in New England was was in DC and took the subway and got blamed for somebody who threw a bottle down an escalator. So that way we should also be trained to deal with people with autism and also not be using our targets rather than going the right way of investigating or using video surveillance to get to the right person who actually did the incident.
No, understand, Phil, that's all heard. I'll take Paul's question as well and then come back to Phil. Paul?
Okay.
All right. Hello, I'm Paul Samuelford. I'm the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. So, of course, when we talk about Metro Access safety, I'm always want to give some suggestions and comments. Given the fact we're not where we should be, we're not yet where we need to be on those numbers with safety incidents, with vehicles or door-to-door service. I know Metro Access staff, we've discussed in subcommittee meetings, way they're trying to vigorously work on that. Any thoughts? I'm interested in hearing any new initiatives and things that are down the pike that you guys are collaborating with Metro Access staff and trending down aggressively those statistics and numbers.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Chair, thanks, Paul. I'll do Paul first and then respond to Phil. So, Paul, I am very confident in what Christian Blake has laid out, whether it be the incident free in 23, extensive or enhanced oversight of procedures when it comes to fitness for duty and preparing for preparing those drivers through extensive training and follow-up, and ultimately changing this reporting culture. Some of the increase that we might be seeing is the could be a byproduct of more trust in being placed in the management by the drivers, rather than fearing that they're just going to lose their jobs as by default. So at the moment, I think Christian is very well placed to be successful, and we Christian's giving himself and the team till the end of this year to see how those efforts are embedding. Secondly, Phil, when you talk about autism, from personal experience with relatives and also as a police officer in London, I've been very acutely aware of autism and the challenges. Even someone who knows about autism and has some knowledge, it's sometimes tricky to diagnose that in a dynamic situation on the street. And maybe I can talk to you, Phil, about what resources might be open to us. I'm thinking about our ambassadors, our new customer ambassadors who are out in the streets, our bus supervisors, as well as our station managers, may really benefit from some kind of information and education, because I can totally understand, and I have been in part of incidents that have escalated out of hand where there's been a lack of understanding of what autism is and how it expresses itself. So I really appreciate that point. Chair, just handing it back to you, but
all right,
Manu, please do share my cell phone and my email. I'll be coming back to those who ask questions within the next 48 hours.
Very good. I think those are the last two subjects, particularly. I think those are important to look into, see what Absolutely. We can do as far as making progress in those areas. Certainly, we don't have enough time to be able to go through solutions, but I think highlighting them right now is good. And let's see what we can do to improve in those areas. Thank you, sir. Thank appreciate you. That.
And Chair Sheehan, if I may take a quick second.
Yes.
If for any other members who have questions, Mr. Blake, I see you just raised your hand. Any AAC members, if you have any questions, please feel free to email those to me, and I will share it with Mr. Johnson so that you can get your questions answered.
Very good. Thank you, Anu. And then following on this, we have Michael Ancelo. He is chief of Metro's Transit Police Department, also VP within WMATA. Sir, as I said earlier to Jamie, I had heard both of you speak at the RAC, and I was very impressed with what you had to say, the areas that you covered as far as the safety report. And I know that there have been incidents before and since, but letting us know what you're doing and what progress you're making in those areas would be great. So the floor is yours, sir.
Oh, thank you. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for inviting me to speak here tonight. I've got Assistant Chief George Nader here with me as well. I'll give you an overview as far as I think some of you may or may not know that Metro, dealing with fare evasion, we've started an effort to cite people and those that don't cooperate with the process, we arrest. But we've also started with 10 stations installing new fare gates that are more difficult for people to fare evade through. And we hope to have that, the general manager hopes to have that throughout all the Metro stations, within the year or so. So that effort is underway. Our crime is up this year, mainly driven by stolen cars. We are having, I think some of you may be familiar, and last fall there was a YouTube video put out on how to steal a Kia or a Hyundai in particular. And that's what we're seeing, the vast majority of the stolen cars and the large increase we've seen at Metro and in the Washington, D.C. region have been cars that were Kia or Hyundai makes. We are doing a number of initiatives to try to curtail that. We are patrolling the lots. We've had a number of community outreach activities where we've given anti-theft devices clubs to persons that were driving Kias and Hyundais. And then we continue to make arrests for people that do steal the cars. However, on the prosecution side, it's a little bit more difficult because there's, you know, it's considered a property crime, and you know, some jurisdictions don't necessarily put a lot of resources into property crimes. But we're continuing our efforts with that. And then another one is robberies. Our robberies are up this year. Mainly robberies where they're snatching something out of usually a cell phone, where there's a fight between two individuals, where the person that gets the better of the person in the fight ends up stealing, you know, their cell phone or valuables or something like that. So we have seen a significant increase in robberies, but again, we are mirroring what the region has too, because they've seen an increase in robberies in, you know, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. So we're kind of staying on top of that. The good news is, out of this, we do close a lot of our robbery cases. Our detectives and officers do a really good job. And as you know, we have an extensive video system, you know, throughout Metro, and our officers are now wearing body-worn cameras as well. So we're able to identify some of these perpetrators, get warrants for their arrest, or making an on-scene arrest. So that's actually going pretty well. And we are having some significant impact as far as prosecutions go. So just for this year, our arrests are up 87%. Our citations that we give for fare evasion are up 681%. So our overall increase in, you know, enforcement is up significantly over last year, about 260% or so. You know, what I can do is just sort of answer a few questions. I'm going to let Chief Nader do the presentation on the Purple app. But according to, I think it, Mr. Weintraub, I think, brought up about autism training. So we do train our officers, you know, on autism. It's a class that they go through at basic recruit officer training, and then we do it in service training as well. It's fairly new, probably within the last, what, 2 or 3 years, George?
Yes, sir.
And we've started it, and we have had officers receive some accommodations, particularly dealing with some of the kids that do have autism, that we've helped their parents that were riding the system and, you know, help the kids get through, you know, some of the things. And we, the general manager did have an event where we had some folks that had autism that, you know, liked to ride the trains. So we do train on autism. Now, I think the next thing was the Purple app, and I'm not sure if you have the presentation, Ms. Sharma.
Yes, sir. Chief.
Okay. I'll let Chief Nader talk a little bit about that.
Chief, I apologize. You were saying, I got distracted for a quick second.
Oh, that's okay. Do you have the presentation on the Purple app? I think we have the video.
Yes. Would you like me to display it now?
Okay. Yes, please.
Sure. Give me one quick second.
And as we're pulling this up, this app is on every officer's phone. It's very user-friendly. We haven't had any issues with it. The use rate, we haven't had any reports that the app is hard to use or unavailable at any time. So as you can see, every officer has a Metro issued phone, and the VRI app, Purple, is on every officer's phone. Step one, you click on the button, it goes to the next image. Step two, you start the interpreter session, and it goes to where step three, where the video is here. Then it emails you back the dialogue that goes on between the officer and the interpreter. And we show that right with anybody that may be having issues with hearing or anybody that may need an interpreter. We found it to be pretty successful when we heard that there were questions about the app working. What we did was we put out a training bulletin to make sure that all of our officers refamiliarized themselves and the supervisors discussed the app and roll call and how to use it. So we're highly confident that our officers are familiar with it. You know, with the body cams now, if there's any incident involved, we would have the ability to review that and look at it. So I don't know if we could play the video to show everyone kind of how the app works.
Yes, I would stop sharing for a quick second because I do need to include the sound, which okay. earlier. So I would, your sound, and now I should be able to share again with sound.
I knew the play button is on the bar. There you go.
Yeah, the captions are blocking it and I'm not able to play it.
Oh no.
1 second.
So as we're trying to pull it up, I can give you just a brief what happens on the call. As soon as you enter the call, it's almost like a FaceTime where there's video shared. The interpreter immediately answers utilizing sign language, and we have the ability to speak, and they sign both what we say and then their response so that anybody that's in need of that service will have it. It's a pretty instantaneous.
I should be able to play it now, and I apologize. I had to stop the captions for a brief moment. Still not playing.
ADER.
Uh-huh.
And there's no MTPD number because this is just a test call.
No MTP number. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay. Was everyone able to hear that audio, video?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, we were.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things, too, I think people would be happy to know is that, you know, we're committed to autism and autism awareness. We have participated in creating a badge for autism awareness that we wear to support autism awareness. It was a part of a national initiative to make sure law enforcement organizations are aware, and we chose to participate in that. So we shared that with all of our officers, you know, in addition to the trainings that we do. We're always looking for new trainings. If someone has any suggestions or any guidance on where we could go that has a good program, we would definitely go there and see if we could model something, if it's one of the best practices. And with that, I think if anyone has any questions regarding the Purple app or the VRI app, that we could answer.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. We do have three AAC members with their hands up in the order, Tino Calabia, Philip Weintraub, and Debbie Fisher. So, Tino, go ahead.
Enrico.
Okay, thank you. Tina, would you be able to unmute yourself?
Chief, last month, the Washington Post ran an article about subway surfing, this dangerous practice by teenagers, and they interviewed teenagers in both Fairfax and Montgomery County who have been doing it in the recent past. One of our local teenagers died subway surfing. Has this come up amongst your police officers, what to do about it and that sort of thing?
Yes, so it is illegal. There's signs posted Within the subway cars. As soon as you leave the subway car, you know, you are subject to arrest. We've looked at, you know, several incidents. Unfortunately, the ones that we found out about, either through video or reports, you know, we had one a couple of years ago where a man tried to subway surfing and then tried to go underneath the bridge at the Pentagon, and you know, he was killed. And then recently, the young man that was killed over by Rhode Island Avenue Metro. So we do monitor social media. And then, you know, we don't get a whole lot of reports about subway surfing from riders or other ways that we do get reports or officers. But we have had a few instances about that. I know Metro is trying to work through, you know, more of a public education campaign to discourage this amongst young people. But we've had a few incidents. Unfortunately, two have been fatal of the subway surfing. But if a person is contacted and we do know that they were outside the car or trying to do the train surfing, they are subject to arrest.
Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you, Chief. I just wanted one thing I wanted to mention, and it may be what you're using, but the Ethan Saylor Alliance in Maryland developed a curriculum for training law enforcement and I believe first responders in strategies and techniques for working with all people with developmental disabilities, which was my second point. We're obviously concerned about people understanding how to work with the autistic population, but there's a broad range of people with developmental disabilities who are part of our vulnerable population. And frankly, it also includes people who've had brain injuries, people who suffer from mental illness. They're all somewhat or completely similar to our autism population in terms of some of the sensitivity and strategies that are needed to work with them. And this particular curriculum has been is really one of the best practices out there. So you may already be using it, but I wanted to bring it to your attention.
Yes, ma'am. About 2 years ago, we started that training. If it's one and the same, there's a training specific to that. It's called Mental Health First Aid for First Responders. And all of our officers are certified in that. And every in-service, they get retrained on it. So it's an initial 8-hour block of instruction on top of the other training that we get. So we do a 40-hour crisis intervention training for all officers. And then now we do the mental health first aid. That's the 8-hour block. And then every year there's a 2-hour refresher on it. So we are part of that. And that deals with various types of mental health and also crisis and developmental challenges. So we are working towards that already. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Great, thank you. And if you aren't using the Ethan Saylor Alliance, it's worth having whoever are your trainers to take a look. I suspect you are, but that was the young man in Frederick who died as a result of being inappropriately treated when he refused to leave the movie theater. So if you've been around for a while, this was the response to it. So it's considered a best practice. It's well done. If you're not using that one, have your trainers take a look at it.
Yeah, and we also have, so we started a program with crisis intervention counselors who are trained in a variety of crisis interventions. And we started with four, and those four were so overwhelmingly successful. Mr. Clark gave us six additional, so we have a total of 10. We have 6 on board already and 4 coming on board here shortly.
That's true. And I think I had read about that, and it's clearly going to make a difference.
So they're a very proactive team. They go out and assist them and try to provide assistance to people. They follow up with the people that we have had encounters with within the system. And sometimes they partner with officers to go out and deal with incidents live. So yeah, we are doing a lot of work in that. But I will pass the Ethan Saylor Alliance on to our trainer unit just to make sure that we're in line with what their practices are.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes.
I think we had one more question, Anu.
Yes, Philip, and then Rico. Phil, go ahead.
Hi, I was also wondering, what are you doing about how we're going to stop these stabbings and shootings on the subway? Because it's just been really scaring me, because twice it happened right around the time I was getting on a train at the particular station. Including that recent one at the Navy Yard when I was which happened right about the time I was getting on the subway to go home from the go home from a baseball game, and I was that kind of scared me.
So that one, sir, we actually made an arrest on that one. It was that day. Some of the things I think that you'll find interesting is that that individual has been arrested 19 times recently. So that part of the justice system that we need for accountability probably should step up a little bit. But interesting, so the chief explained that we started fare enforcement really heavily. And interesting enough to share this study that we did, we looked at every violent crime that happened this year in the metro, and we looked at ones that we could establish whether the individual fare evaded or didn't fare evade. And what we found is a shocking number, that 97% of the people that commit violent crime in the metro fare evade. So with our fare enforcement, we're really trying to, one, prevent those folks from coming into the system, two, encounter folks, and really start concentrating on folks carrying weapons illegally, to include knives, you know. And then we're too weighing heavily on our clinicians to be out there and try to offer people services that may be having any type of mental health crisis that we can assist with. Because that one that you're talking about, that individual has a lengthy history of mental health. But then also what we got to look at is the increased drug use that induces some of this behavior that you know, that has to be addressed on a societal level, because a lot of the folks that we encounter are under the influence of drugs. And so we have Narcan, all of our officers carry Narcan. And in the month of, I think it's either June or July, we administered Narcan on 28 different occasions. So that means almost every day of the month we administered Narcan. We're saving people's lives, but it does show how widespread the drug use epidemic is right now.
Right, and I think our last question, sir. Rico, I think you're up.
Rico, you're on mute. You need to unmute yourself.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you for that, Chief. Chief Johnson is from Cleveland, who emailed me last week. She want to know more about the VRI also. And Johnson is from Cleveland, and she want to know about how y'all got the VRI. Chief Johnson, I know she worked for RTA in Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
And her office number, ooh, I can't remember offhand, but I could send it to Anu, that she would send it to you. I know it's okay. Chief Johnson. She want to get that program also.
And Rigo, we did email the chief and just let her know we're available. Anything we can do to assist, you just let her know. We'd be more than happy to do that for her.
Okay. I know the CEO of, I brought it to them, and then the CEO of Cleveland put the assignment to chief, and chief said, have y'all contact her. The last time I talked to her last week, that was what she told me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
And you can make that commitment on our behalf. We'd be more than happy to help.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chief.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. We've got, I think we're out of time here. Michael, Jamie, appreciate both of you spending time with us tonight. I haven't gone through even the metrics piece. I know that they are looking at, objectives and key results as to the safety of the system and what's happening and all of that. So between what you're doing and how it's being measured, I think we're making progress, but I appreciate you coming, answering our questions. And I think we've got some areas that we can improve focus on to help improve safety also.
No, I agree. No, and thank you for having us. It was definitely enjoy coming out and, being able to talk and answer questions and work on these, particularly the safety issues.
And we have some people here who are subject matter experts in all kinds of areas. So going through Anu and Mr. Blake, they know how to reach us. So if there's any other ways that we can help move the ball forward, increase safety, that's great. Call on us. That's why we're here.
We certainly will. So we'll probably take you up on that.
Good.
We need all the help we can get.
we don't want to be bored here. We want to be used. Great. Thank you both. Appreciate it very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay. Chair Sheehan, this is Anu.
Yes,
Anu. Now it's time for our public comments. So if we have, I know Marcy Goldstein would like to make some public comments. However, before we go to Marcy, Mr. Blake, do you'd like to say something? Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to, good evening, good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to just follow up briefly, not to belabor the point, but as Mr. Simmelford had raised about what is Metro Access doing, and I think Mr. Johnson answered it pretty clearly, but I wanted to remind you all that, one, you get these data points each month. So you've been provided this data point. Now, the chart you saw is a long-term chart. So there clearly was a problem, and Terry Ann and her entire team, Terry Prevo, who I know many of you know, and along with myself and others, have worked very hard on this. They are the ones, you heard Mr. Johnson speak a lot about the monthly safety campaigns. And I think Terry has spoke with the AAC about that several times. You also heard Mr. Johnson mention the technology, and that's been kind of, all of our piece, but I've been a big advocate of the technology looking in the vehicles. And I think you, Mr. Simmelford, and others have talked about hearing my little friend tell the drivers to stop looking down, do what they have to do, and so that has certainly proven to be a tremendous help. And I just wanted to just close by saying, so I know, again, when you look at certain charts, there's certain things you see. We've been sharing this data with you, but I could just tell you, just for facts, for the last 6 months, we've actually met, Metro Access have met our safety metric on that chart. It won't show it as much because, again, we're looking at a broader area, but we're taking this day by day to bring these improvements. For the last 6 months, we've met our safety incident metric. And for the last 5 months, we've met our injury metric. And so our numbers have been coming down. We're using the technologies. We're using the safety messaging. And even customers, those of you who are booking trips on Metro Access, I think you also hear a safety message on the IVR as you're booking your trip. So we're absolutely all in on the safety. Not that we weren't always, but now we have more tools at our disposal and a real, not one person's job, but the whole team. So I just wanted to say we'll be talking with you more, of course, Mr. Summerford, and the whole committee during the Metro Access subcommittee meetings moving forward. But I want you to be aware that there's been a tremendous amount of improvement, especially in the last 6 months on our performance in that regard.
Good. Thank you, sir. Yes, that is one of the reasons I brought up the metrics, is because I see that is being measured every month, and it's also being communicated not only to us in the rank, but primarily to the board of directors. So, That's good to say. Anu,
sir,
do we have any comments?
Yes. So continuing with or beginning the public comments now. If any members of the public who are connected on this meeting would like to make public comments, please raise your hand now so that we can take the public comments in the order received. So far, we have one AAC member who would like to make public comments. Chair Sheehan, since we do not have any members of the public who would like to make comments, we can go to Marcy Goldstein.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, Marcy, go ahead. I would begin your 3 minutes when you start speaking.
I just wanted to make a comment that the bus on Columbia Pike, my girlfriend is having trouble with the bus operators. They don't want to put the straps or whatever. They don't want to put these straps on the wheelchair. What's going on?
Marcy,
Is she saying the operators don't want to put the straps on her wheelchair?
Right.
On Metro Access?
No.
On the bus.
On the regular city bus.
On the bus. Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah, we need to follow up with you, Marcy. I need to get some more details, and then I can bring my colleagues from bus into the conversation and try to address the individuals who aren't adhering to these rules.
Yeah, it seems the buses aren't the operators on Columbia Pike.
So we will follow up with you.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Good.
Thank you, Marcy and Mr. Blake. Chair Sheehan.
We had somebody else, I believe.
Tino raised his hand, and then Rico put a note stating he would like to make comments. So, Tino, go ahead. I would start the 3 minutes when you start speaking.
Sure. This relates to the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Award that WMATA just got for its new building. It received the Platinum Award, a perfect 100% score. The highest certification that can be awarded. I note that because, as you know, last month I criticized the look and use of the HUD program, the HUD building across the street. Well, as bad as that is, this award is really terrific for our new WMATA headquarters. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you,
Tina. Thank you, Tina.
Rico, I would start the 3 minutes.
Hey, when I took a trip to my when I went back home in July 25th, I took a trip to and see how they doing. They call it paying transit there. Paying transit, and they have the machine that the customer could pay on the on the transit on the machine, and they have a car. I think it's called Easy Fare, something like that. I think that's what they called it. And I asked them. They said because it's more accessible for all people with a disability. And this month is Deferendus Month. So that's my questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rico. Yes, thank you for sharing that information. We had shared it with our management. Phil Weintraub, go ahead.
Hi, I was also thinking maybe is there a way, I know it's like a lot of the newer stations have multiple elevators, but is there a way to at least have all stations have at least two or three or four elevators at each station? Because with all the breaking down of the elevators, it just didn't have, it just locked people like I, who you need the elevators have to like be up, shuttled to another station, and it takes longer. Because I have friends who use wheelchairs and need the elevator, and they always complain that the elevator is always breaking down. And they have to go to another stop to get an elevator. Is there a way we could have multiple elevators at each station? So if one breaks down, there still be one that be another that be working.
So Philip, I can perhaps answer that partly. This is Pat Sheehan, being a historical artifact with this committee. The question of elevators is you know why this whole committee really got started in the beginning. You notice in the older stations that elevators are kind of in strange places, and that's because when the system was originally designed, it had no elevators. And so one of the things Richard Hettinger sued WMATA to get elevators put in. And elevators were put in not the same way. I mean, you have them in some strange places. Sometimes you'd have to go up to a level and get an elevator, whatever. The new stations have, and this is a policy that the AAC established, I don't know, maybe it was in the 90s or 80s, but we established that all new stations would have elevators that had, you know, redundant shafts all the way up and down the in the system. And so that is a design spec that we have now. I don't know, you know, I guess elevators are extremely expensive, and in the older buildings they weren't designed for it. They are did the best they could with putting them where they could. But I would say under new construction, like let's say the Silver Line, you're going to have very good elevators in places that are easy to find and are well designed. I don't know, Mr. Blake, Anu, Carol, you want to correct me on anything?
No, I think that you stated the history very well. Thank you. I just wanted to add that anytime there's a new entrance or a new construction, we do have a minimum of 2 elevators per level change. However, in the older stations, it's very difficult to retrofit elevators. But in the past, not so distant past, we've had a presenter from the planning group who showed that we're doing studies on how to retrofit elevators in older stations. And of course, those things have to be, those studies have to be funded eventually to retrofit, so they don't go as fast as we'd like to. But currently, we just advocated for a study to add 2 elevators at Brooklyn Station. The funding stops when the design is completed. So we still need to put that on a list to be funded as far as the construction process. And they're very expensive. Throughout in the city, it's very difficult to retrofit those elevators because we're going to in somebody else's property. So some of our studies have included coming up in elevators on the sidewalk instead. So we're in public land, and we're putting a great effort on planning properly, but as Patrick said, it's very expensive and we need to get it funded as well.
And so Philip, one of the things that we can do is maybe make this a little more specific and track your specific request through the bus rail subcommittee. I think that would be effective. Thank you, Carol. Are there any other, we're kind of jumping into our next category here. Was there anything else for public comment?
Chair Sheehan, this is Anu. We do not have any hands up.
Good. So why don't we move into our next subject? Thank you, everybody. We're doing a very good job with a packed agenda, keeping pretty much on track. We have Constitution and Bylaws.
Chair Sheehan, yeah. this is Anu. Would you... would you care if we quickly touch base on the 2023 Hettinger Award, and then you have the time to discuss the bylaws? Sure.
You're the boss.
All right. Just to, as a reminder, we do have the AAC Hettinger 2023 Award. The committee decided that it will be held at the AAC December 5th meeting instead of going into the next year. And we did start the process pretty early this year. All of you, as of last week, have received the Hettinger Award packets. So you have the criteria. This is just a reminder that you have the criteria. Go through it if you have not had a chance to go through it already, and fill in the nominations, provide your nominations by the deadline stated in that criteria. And at the October AAC meeting, we can also touch base about the nomination process and the voting process. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Anu. Yes, we did. I think we started this one. Was it June? At least June. It might have been May even. Okay. So yes, I do like being able to have the award ceremony in December. Usually December is a little bit slower as far as the month is concerned. Nice to have the award for the 2023 in 2023 as opposed to 2024. So that'll be good. Okay, let's go on to the bylaws. We put a committee together. Four of us, Paul.
Work group.
I'm sorry?
Called the work group. Yes.
Very good. All right. Good. Thank you, Paul. As you can see, Paul was there to correct to make sure I was on track. So, yes, a work group. Paul did the reading for us and kept us on track. Sandy Neusel and Denise Bush and myself were the members. We met four times. I guess we worked a total of like 8 hours. My impression is that the bylaws were in pretty good shape from before, but we did have to make some updates and some changes. We have a product that is going to be sent out to you today. So of course we're not going to go through it today, but what we would like you to do is to take a look at it and come up with suggestions. We're going to take the next several meetings and go through it. I think it took us about 8 hours to go through it with our suggestions. We made suggestions in a number of areas. Particularly, we hit some things that we knew were important, like hybrid meetings. Looked at a few other things, which Paul and Sandy can talk about. The process is going to be, we will review it. I know it's going to take some time to get through this committee. Once we have it with all the suggestions in there and sufficiently discussed, it will then go to the board of directors, who will then send it over to legal. They will make their suggestions, and it'll be signed by the board as a product from the AAC to the board. So in the discussions that we have, this is a product of the AAC, so AAC members will be the ones who will have input into this document going before the board. We will not take input from the committee. From the public. If they have comments, they can always direct their comments to the board. But this is a product of AAC to the board, and then, of course, it'll go through legal. And it'll be reviewed again in a timely manner, probably a little more timely manner than us. It should have been reviewed 5 years, but with COVID, we kind of got a little bit out of whack and took more time than we should have to get this done. But I think not a lot of huge changes in what we have going forward. I think it's a good product. It was excellent working with, members of the committee. A very good committee. We worked hard, and they were a good group. So thank you very much, committee, for all this work. Paul, Sandy, I don't know if Darnese is here. Wanted to give some input.
When you look at this document,
note that all the changes for those who have screen readers, for right now, the color that we chose was blue after, you know, we consulted, you know, Sandy and Pat. So all the changes are in blue. Any changes that you note, there'll be two asterisks before the change and two asterisks after the change. And it's highlighted in blue. If there's another suggested color, if it's not working out when you use it to translate with screen readers, please let Anu know. And we will work with Anu to figure out what will work for most people to access this draft to read. Please do come back with your suggestions. Some of the things, major, adjustments that we made in these revisions is, you know, incorporating, things about hybrid, virtual, or in-person meetings and what that would suggest to possibly look like. We also put in there items. We did some, slight modifications just to tighten up about subcommittees. We also put in some information about term limits for emeritus members and AFA members to make it correspond to what is there for the regular rest of the members that are on the committee. And we also included some things in talking about in terms of the mission statement, the goals of the AAC. We added two more goals, suggested goals in there that we can, discuss. So do pay attention to that. And we also did some slight revisions with some of the responsibilities of AAC members. And we want you to take note of all those things in blue, but they'll have two asterisks before and after. And we also talked about some changes in membership, not the current composition, but, maybe including things like, people participation from Loudoun County and how that may look and to be considered. And we talked about some things about safety, equity, and inclusion in this. So we really hope that we will work through this. And again, we're going to be open to everyone's suggestions as we go through it. I'll, go line by line through it over the next several, however it takes, AAC meetings. And we're going to receive everyone's input here from the committee and the public, and then move that document on to the board for review along with their with legal. But do understand that whatever suggestions we have in here, they will take from us seriously, but like I said, there could be additional changes or suggestions, and the final word rests with the board between them in consultation with legal, and then that would be the final document that's put out for it in terms of revision.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Good. Thank you for all that reading you've done also, Paul, on that. That's great. Go, Sandy?
Yeah, so I just want to emphasize that we really did work hard to bring this sort of up to date in terms of, technology and the wording about, disability, equity, inclusion, accessibility, both for us and for the Metro, working with us. We also added a little bit more to be a bit more specific about what Paul said, our responsibilities, to include site visits as sponsored by Metro and, beta testing of software, because there is more and more software being used within the Metro system and within
Metro Access.
Within Metro Access. Yes. And I also want to mention in the additions in between asterisks in blue, we also did strike through to where we were deleting wording. Sometimes there'll be like a couple sentences that are deleted that's followed by a new better version of that sentence in blue. And I think we at one point had deletions between square brackets, but I'm not sure if those all got changed over to straight through. Sometimes there are additions in blue in parentheses with a question mark, because, you know, that might be something that the Metro board should be considering, but we're trying to bring it to their attention and bring it to your attention also for consideration. So
thank you Sandy. That's yes, good. I'd forgotten about those other areas that you talked about. And the other thing, the other people that have looked at it, ADAP, Mr. Blake, Anu, and others, so that we weren't missing anything. Two, we weren't kind of overstepping in areas where we could have misstated something. So it's gone through their review, and I think came back pretty clean. So I'm happy about that. And now we'll take it back to you guys. And as Paul said, walk through it line by line. And I think as you get further into the document, there's more meat to the document as far as the, you know, where we might go with discussions. But I was pleased that it was a good solid document when we got it. And, but there were things that we had to update in the last 5 years. And one of the things that we did say is that as far as, you know, calculation for term limits for AAC members, I believe we recommended that everything start from the year that the first set of bylaws came out, which I think was 2015 or something like that. Yeah. So that's sort of where we are.
And we do have a hand from Denise Rush. She does, I guess, want to make a comment.
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Denise. Yes.
There we go.
Go ahead, African Queen. Hello.
Last time I checked about 2 weeks ago that the board of directors meeting, the last meeting in July, is not up on the system. Is there a reason why? Is the technology something wrong?
I knew.
Hello? Ms. Rush, this is Carol. We're going to have to check to see why it's not up. If it's not up, we are not aware of any technology issues right now.
All right. Thank you.
We'll follow. Okay. This is Anu Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
As far as the reviews are concerned, Carol also had an opportunity. Carol also reviewed the draft.
Good.
Just wanted to mention that.
Excellent. Okay. And, good.
All the AAC members have received in their inboxes the draft. So you have it, and please look at it at your convenience and provide feedback.
And so we will be starting this as a regular agenda item next month, right, Paul?
Yep. Starting going through until we finish through the document.
There you go. Good. Okay. There any other questions for the bylaws committee? Just want to say thank you to them. It's a good job. Okay. So I think
Joe has a question. This is the interpreter.
Yes. I will not be here in October because I'm having surgery on October 3rd. October 2nd will be my last meeting. I have a surgery on October the 3rd, that Tuesday.
Well, health comes number one, Rico. So good luck on your surgery. And we will, there'll be plenty of time. We certainly won't get it finished in 1 month. So take your time to heal, and there'll be plenty of time to get comments in. Make sure we haven't missed anything, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Good. Anything else? Okay. I think, thank you, committee. Bus Rail Committee. Tino, you're up. Tino?
In 10th, we dealt with the new anti-evasion fare vending machines. That was really an important topic. It was presented to us by Catherine Herman and Greg Garbach. Another informational item was on the temporary bus shelters. And then we introduced the idea of the Hettinger Award for 2023. Then we had public comment and adjournment, and those were the topics. And we'll review the draft report at our next meeting next week.
Okay, any question? Tino, any questions for Tino?
Chair Sheehan, this is an, I do not see anybody's hands up.
All right, very good. And Philip, if you wanted to investigate any of the elevators that you were concerned about, certainly I think putting that into the agenda for the bus rail committee would be appropriate. That'd be fine. Okay, very good. Well, we might get out of early in this meeting. No questions for Tino. We'll go to Paul for Metro Access.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back after August recess. We had a fully packed agenda meeting for September, but I'm going to recap what we did in the month of July. We did have a discussion about our subcommittee work plan with a lot of topics, and I thank you for all giving feedback. Like I said, this is an ongoing document, so if there's other things you want to discuss as they come up, please add it to the subcommittee work plan. I know we discussed things on updates on real-time data. We talked about phone option for customers without smartphones. We talked about, Metro Access reservations that people will be able to book trips via phone, training for security staff on the handling of customers on rail and bus. We definitely talked about having on our WorkFan Metro performance presentation, things about Loudoun County and how Metro Access gets impacted by that in terms of that service expansion. And several other things. We did have a discussion about the Metro Access Garmin GPS, and we hope to get a hear out from management how that is working along at the next meeting, where there were, some, vehicles without it, and, that. I saw some more and passed it on to management. So hopefully they have been aggressively working on cutting down those issues. Ms. Williams Hall talked about Metro Access reservations by phone discussion. She's going to have a more in-depth discussion at the meeting and how they're using AI to book reservations. This will help, give people another option, technology solution to book their reservations, with ease. In addition to speaking of a person if they have to, but if not, she said it'll be just as comfortably good, easy to do, and they'll be able to get three tries in terms of times versus the current two with an agent when negotiating a time for a particular reservation. So this looks very promising, and we are eager to hear about that presentation. I know she said at some point she does, before rolling it out with customers, want to beta test it with AAC members, and we look to hear more information about that. Mr. Blake gave an update about the minivans, and we'll hear hopefully more about that at a future meeting. For this current meeting here, that's coming up, for our September agenda, we are going to talk about those Metro Access performance statistics that are available on the Metro website now. And we're going to follow up about reservations. I suggested an amended agenda because I did put on the agenda to discuss one statistic. Where's my ride? In terms of We should be receiving calls within, you know, answered in 3 minutes. And it's noticed that with that statistics, while it is going up, that over the past few months, it was in the 70% and then 86%, I believe, for the month of July. And we hope to see that a little bit higher to get up to our, 95% threshold. But the fact that we are having to wait, and even myself on the phone, an average of 5 or 10 minutes to get to an agent, and this was happening all summer long, I know we will have, a very lengthy discussion as to how we're going to improve that customer service experience when we try to reach somebody, especially at peak times. But that is it for now, unless Ms. Russ wants to add anything else. Also, we're going to get a report out about, improvements with the web booking because of the issues that we are experiencing, myself and other customers.
I remember, and Paul, this is Pat, I'll just add one thing. I did ask whether the use of AI was going to affect the fact that they, were letting anybody go from the reservations department. But they said that they were going to keep the same amount of staff that they had, and that AI would just be used when call volume got to a certain level so they could keep,
And I did hear from the director that possibly next year they're working on it, the possible use of AI for Where's My Ride, but that is a work in process in the way
it's more complicated.
And that's more complicated, but we definitely need to work very hard on the issue that I've seen, and hopefully I'm assuming some of y'all have noticed when you call in that it's taking between 5 and 10 minutes to reach somebody on average.
Can I just add this?
Because you got to always, I'm a numbers guy and I'm very precise with the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what I think I'm going to do, Paul, because you said it twice now, because we have to be careful. Yes, the OCC, I should be on camera, the Operations Control Center has a goal, and we're trying to hold them to it. And through the introduction of technology, we want to make it a better experience. And I'm a believer in machine learning, as they call it, or now artificial intelligence, whatever we want to call it. So we're introducing it, but we're trying to do it slowly and surely. And we're working with some other folks than the ones who used to call you on that pre-arrival call in the middle of the night when your trip was in the morning. We're doing something different this time. However, I think what we're going to do at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, I'm going to give you the official average wait time, because there's a difference between the OCC not meeting its metric of answering every call within 2 minutes and saying everybody who calls in has to wait 5 or 10 minutes. There's a huge difference between those two things. And I know, and I'll just tell you, I was at the airport earlier today waiting for the shuttle, and it felt like forever to get through. When you're ready to get on that shuttle to get to your car, it can feel like forever. I'm not downplaying your experience or anybody else, because I get the calls too, because with a lot of customers, you don't do so as much anymore. I don't know if that's good or bad, but a lot of customers, when they can't get to the OCC, they decide to call me and make me the OCC. And I'm okay with that whenever I can answer the call. And I'm not saying change your language tonight or even in the future, but I will share with you that I'm going to look for the actual average wait time so we all can be on the same page.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Stating that. All right, but I don't believe everybody's calling in has to wait 10 minutes. Let me just say that.
But it just felt that way this summer after the meeting. But like I said, y'all had this well under control, and I would love to see y'all get back to that.
And we need to. And the manager of the OCC is on the line. I just text her, and she's listening. So we're going to get that number to you. But please don't take this in any way of making an excuse. The number needs to be back to 95% answered within 2 minutes. Absolutely. I just want to make sure when you're, because then you're.
Yeah, because I saw 76, 86, which is increasing.
Right. Yes. The percentage that they're answering has dropped to levels that are unacceptable. But when in your role, when you're presenting that number, we just want to be careful, and I'll get the official number. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good. All right. And the other thing I was going to say, Paul, I know that I had asked this question or it had come up in the past, is that when you get a Where's My Ryan, the operator there will be able to look at sort of the history of what's happened that afternoon, so that if you did one or two or three different things, they can see all of that as opposed to just one screen. And I know that we talked about that in the past, but you know what? We don't want to give away all of your meeting because nobody will show up. We want
management and their staff to give their weight and their input as to what we're going to do to make this better, because I know they got the tools.
Right. And all right. So thank you, Paul. Any other questions for Paul? No questions for Paul. I have one comment and a question. I'll end up with that. So the comment is, I think it was brought up by Jamie in an earlier presentation, talked about your accessibility officer coming on board. Would be great to know, having worked in the accessibility field for a while, that everyone sees the word accessibility in a different way. Physical accessibility, digital accessibility, whatever. So I guess when the individual comes to talk to us, how they see how WMATA sees accessibility will be interesting to see going forward, what your chief sort of accessibility officer will be doing, what the priorities will be. But I think that's great. So I'll look forward to that. And then my question is, and I don't know if Ms. Rush is here, but I don't believe that we had an August surprise. So I think we went through the month of August without anything that I remember as a surprise. Are you losing your touch, Mr. Blake?
Well, I just have to say, I shouldn't do this to them. The OCC kept me so busy, I didn't have time to come up with a surprise.
Well, okay, sir.
No, I shouldn't do that to them. But no, there was no surprise. I mean, I think what we're trying to do is continue to be on the edge in terms of paratransit. But again, we have to always be careful and not rush into things. We truly believe the AI is going to make a difference. Before we even get to the AI, well, it depends. We'll see the process. One of the things I've been doing more and more is text messaging. And I've been responding to people in text messages almost like a machine would respond, kind of personal, but not personal. You're supposed to believe you're talking to a machine, and we're going to have more and more staff in the OCC doing that, so that when Paul calls, he has a right to call and everybody else has a right to call, but maybe Paul can just send a text message, "Where is my ride?" Mm-hmm. And first, we're going to start with human responders and help the computer learn how to respond to Paul and others and quickly access the information to share with the customer. So I've been doing it kind of as the guinea pig, if you will, and we're going to get others to do it. And the more folks who have technology access and can use things like text messaging, that would alleviate their need to call and keep the phone lines open even more. So yeah, no surprise this year. It's more about let's build and get back to no problems, no issues. We want to get back to some period of time where complaints are very low, customer satisfaction is high, and we believe, like we've shown on the safety side with the introduction of technology, we believe that technology is going to help bridge our ability to help the customer experience be better.
Excellent, sir. Good. And my last question for the group is, do I have a motion to adjourn? Oh, Anu. You have your closing statement.
Thank you. Yes. So just as a reminder, because everybody had the month off, I just want to remind that anybody who would like to make public comments can do so by sending us emails or calling and leaving a message. The email where you can send your public comments for any of the meetings, whether it's the full committee, bus rail subcommittee, or the Metro Access subcommittee, is metroaacchair@wmata.com. or you can call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. That concludes my announcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Anu. And so now I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Great. Second?
Second. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very good. Any opposition? No opposition. Thank you, committee. Very nice meeting. We got out early tonight. Very good. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you at next month or at Metro Access or at Bus Rail.
Bus Rail, yes.
Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening.
Have a good evening, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.